during our year-end fund drive from December 15th through the 21st. Anytime before December 31st, Jazz and Justice Circle donations can be made several ways. By calling 202-588-9739 during the pledge drive. By visiting WPFWFM.org and clicking on the big red Donate Now button. Via Cash App at $WPFWFM or via text by simply texting WPFWFM to 80181 and following the clear and easy prompts.
Peace, this is Atan Thomas, and you're listening to WPFW Washington, your station for jazz and justice.
This is a journey.
I got so much trouble on my mind. Refuse to lose. Here's your ticket.
He is amazing.
I didn't know nothing about it.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Say what you say. Say what?
I don't want to be like Mike.
Before Magic's knees go permanently south for the winter.
Be like Mike.
Changing up the guard quicker than fear brings down doo-doo.
With the finger roll, plus the foul.
Hey, young bro.
He never saw Elgin Baylor play during his day or Oscar Robertson.
Flash the dice roll back. The big O was jackknifing through all them bodies.
I didn't know nothing about it.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Calypso. He's Chuck Modiano. I'm Dave Zirin here at your home for Jazz and Justice, 89.3 FM WPFW here in the DMV, attempting to change this world one broadcast at a time. We got a great show for you this week. I'm so excited. Chuck Modiano, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing great, DZ. How about yourself?
Man, doing this show for me is like 10 cups of espresso followed by an electric cattle prod to the tush. I am up and I am ready to go.
That's beautiful. And you already feel like you're on espresso before the show starts.
Absolutely, man. So it's like putting it in an IV and getting it right into the arm.
Let's go.
But I'm especially excited for this week because at 10:15, you know, real soon, we're going to have a true giant in the world of international sports and struggle. Rebecca O'Keefe, a founder and leader of Irish Sport for Palestine. And she's going to get in touch with us from somewhere on this planet Earth because she's always traveling, trying to spread the message of a free Palestine and solidarity from the good people of Ireland. So we're going to speak to her about that, particularly Chuck. And I wonder if our listeners may not know this, because this is something that has always been common political knowledge to me, but is hardly something we're taught in our schools. I want to talk to her about why Ireland, in particular, of all the countries in Europe, has this historic and special relationship with the people of Palestine, and why the history of Irish struggle has, in the minds of the Irish and Palestinian people, always lie pretty neatly against one another in the second half of the 20th century. Yes.
I'm excited to have that conversation. Definitely. It might have to do some with colonization, but I don't want to steal Rebecca's thunder.
Yes. Yeah, we'll talk about it. And also, I think something for you, Chuck, you've studied and tried to understand so much, is the way that white and oppression exist together in our society. And okay, am I back right now? All right, good to go. Sorry about that, everybody. A little technical problem on my end. But, Chuck, we're going to talk about whiteness as well, Ireland, and how Ireland exists in the broader sports firmament. How is it seen right now, as in terms of it being this kind of rebel cousin of the countries of Western Europe? I'm very curious to see what Rebecca has to say about that, being the person who actually lives that life of sports struggle, Ireland and Palestine.
Not only that, DZ, but I had the privilege of seeing you and Rebecca on a panel in Chicago. And what I wanted to say to you now versus later is that there was a protest in Chicago later that day, and I had the privilege to interview Rebecca O'Keefe. And you were nowhere to be found, and I wanted to know how she traveled over nearly 4,000 miles to get here, and I didn't see you there. Could you something to say about that?
Oh, man. Man, I was going to be there, but I had to come back home. You know, that one wasn't on me. That was pre-existing travel plans. Otherwise, you know I'm going to show up and represent.
I didn't want to clown you in front of company.
No. I appreciate actually you doing it just on the air in front of our thousands of listeners.
there you go.
Doing it in front of company. But exactly. No. Rebecca is an absolute soldier, not unlike a Chuck Modiano. So I'm very excited to speak to her. But before we get there, other stuff to discuss, certainly at the intersection of sports and politics, things that are quite serious. Chuck, there are these two stories sort of hanging around the NFL, lingering around the NFL, like an odor that you're not quite sure of its source. Is it the NFL? Or maybe I just forgot to throw the socks in with the laundry. You know, you're just not sure. But their similarities are as such that I wanted to raise them with you. And just to maybe, you know, not that you and I are going to have some sort of definitive answer, but there's an oddness to a couple of incidents that have happened over the course of the NFL season. The first was this past Sunday. Maybe our listeners know about this. Maybe our listeners do not. But the Houston Texans were playing a team called the Jacksonville Jaguars. The Jacksonville Jaguars have a star quarterback who has played pretty terribly this year and is coming off of an injury. His name is Trevor Lawrence. You may have heard of him. And Trevor Lawrence was sliding after a little run out of the pocket in a game they were losing to the Texans. And as Lawrence was sliding, a player for the Houston Texans, who I think most NFL fans had never heard of before Sunday, named Azeez Al-Shaahir. Azeez Al-Shaahir ran in and did what can only be described as an unsportsmanlike play. People have called it, announcers called it a dirty play. I want to actually get into that with you a little bit too, Chuck. And it involved Azeez Al-Shaahir running at Trevor Lawrence and hitting him in the chest, neck, head area with a big forearm as Lawrence was sliding. Absolute no-no. Started a huge brawl. Big fight. Lawrence now on the injured reserve, although I think he was going to go there anyway. That's a whole separate conversation. And Shaahir has since been suspended for 3 games. That's a pretty darn long suspension for the NFL because those are game checks. So it's actually a pretty substantial amount of money. Azeez Al-Shaahir also, Chuck, and this is why I'm raising this, 3 games. Most people were like, suspend this man. And then when 3 games came in, people were like, wow. Wow, for a hit in the middle of a live NFL game with all the violence, kinetic energy taking place, 3 games. And then I was like, well, I can see it. You know, they want to send a message, what have you. And then I learned afterwards, Chuck, that Shaahir had on his cleats all out of pro-Palestinian symbology.
Mm.
And it was that week where the NFL does something I actually used to like a lot, Chuck. It shows you what a sucker I am. Called My Struggle, My Cleats. It's called My Issue, My Cleats. It's got some name like that. But people put issues that matter.
Is it my call?
There you go. There you go, Mike. I knew it. I knew it wouldn't be my struggle, like Roger Goodell is Frederick Douglass or something. I knew it wasn't my my struggle, Mike Leeds.
My struggle. That's right.
Yeah. Without struggle, there is no headaches for Roger Goodell.
That's right. Hey, listen, Roger Goodell put end racism in the end zone. So, you know, don't be too hard on the man.
Yeah, my bad. My bad. And yeah. Shockingly, it hasn't ended racism. So, but right. I have a feeling they're not going to come to a big meeting and try to reassess. Yeah. All right. We put the slogan in the end zone and it didn't work. We need to have an emergency meeting. Nah. So basically, so Shahir has this this Palestine, you know, and speaking about the deaths, and he had the number of people who'd been killed by the Israeli genocide, like printed nicely. Like, it wasn't like, you know, he took a Sharpie before the game. I mean, if anybody's familiar with the My Cause, My Cleats, they do tremendous artwork. They have artists, great artists, who get commissioned to do these beautiful renderings around issues like cancer, for example. But, you know, Shahir took it to a different place. You know, he took it to stop the genocide. Got a three-game suspension. And the thing that it thrust into my mind, Mr. Chuck, was Robert Saleh, when he was fired from the Jets, their head coach. And again, Chuck, it's like, okay, if we want to make like a NFL argument about it, yeah, I would not have fired Saleh. Certainly, it is now looked as an idiotic decision to have been made. I certainly would not have done it. But was he a great coach for the Jets? No, but the Jets are a toxic organization. So how do you even pass judgment on Saleh? But, you know, even though good people might disagree on the merits of that man as a coaching hire, the fact of the matter is he was also fired right after wearing a Lebanon solidarity pin. Right after Israel started bombing Lebanon, Robert Saleh is of Lebanese descent and is a Muslim, as is Shahir, also Muslim. I got to say, Chuck, this really doesn't sit well with me. You got these two stories where maybe two men could have been given the benefit of the doubt. Maybe you could argue they should have had the book thrown at them, pardon that expression in parlance. You could make those arguments. But you could also argue that, well, maybe we're really making this too big a deal. Saleh should not have been fired. Of course, that's certainly proven to be a correct prediction at the time. Shahir, it's sort of like, well, kind of give me a break. It's the NFL. Violence happens. Wow, yeah. Three games. But I sort of get it. Three games. He was defenseless. But then you learn about the Palestine and you learn about the Lebanon and you start to really ask yourself, is there a higher level of discipline meant to discipline players who stand outside the box? There, that's my long preamble. I really want to know what you think.
Man, I love the preamble. You set the table. So let's work from Saleh backwards. Saleh, in my opinion, and I tweeted it at the time, was fired because he wore that Lebanon patch. So before we talk about that, because people say, what is your evidence? That's just conjecture. Well, let me tell you what's not the evidence. The evidence is football. Because in the history of the NFL, no coach who was 2-3 has ever been fired in an NFL season. No coach who's even 2-4 has ever been fired. It's considered to be premature. You're 2-3. He went 7-10 the previous 2 years. And not only that, they had the number 5 defense at the time. You know what the Jets defense is ranked now? It's 15, but they've had the number 23rd defense since that time. You have a coach who turns your defense around, doesn't have a quarterback, and they get rid of him. Not only that, Woody Johnson, the owner, who is an ambassador to the UK, who is a Zionist, has never, ever fired a coach mid-season. He had four and 12 coaches mid-season. Adam Gase went 0-13 and lost his 13th game by the score of 40-3. And Woody Johnson said, you know what? I think he deserves a 14th game. And that same man, after Robert Saleh has a Lebanon patch, makes a rash decision to get rid of him, what no one has done in history. So let's put the dots together. This is not George Steinbrenner, an impulsive owner that we're talking about. He's the anti-Steinbrenner. So So what we can rule out based on history and evidence is that he was fired for football reasons. So if we could rule that out, then it must be something else. And the only other, and we've discussed this, the only other possible reason is if Aaron Rodgers wanted him gone. But in my view, it was the Lebanon patch. So that's
and you know what? I got it before you go to Shahir, yeah. Which I'm also curious Aziz Al-Shahir and Trevor Lawrence. I got to also say, Chuck, that when we had this discussion on the radio, you leaned into trying to understand what happened politically. And I leaned into the whole, come on, give me a break. Maybe there is a political angle. And let's be honest, Aaron Rodgers' politics are beyond suspect in many respects.
Yeah.
But you know, I think this much more looks like a, Rodgers ordered the code red kind of a situation. As much as I'd like to blame Woody, this has right. Rodgers' fingerprints on it. I said that at the time. I think you were more right than I was. I really
wait,
did
do. Did you say that? We're on the air. Could you say that again? I want to make sure everybody hears it.
I think that you were more right than I. What? Oh, I got to go. No.
I hit the record button on my screen to make sure, you know, I have that recorded. But listen,
have
that's
mercy.
An honor
it's going to be
you
your ringtone.
It's gonna be my ringtone. Exactly. But listen, it's fair because there's so many times you were more right than I was. So you have that back. Now
that's
continue,
just humility sir. Talking. But you're like now continue. Please describe in detail how I was right and you were wrong. Here's what it's about for me is we have learned since you and I had our discussion on the air that Woody Johnson also was very, you could argue, impulsively pushing for the benching of Aaron Rodgers earlier in the season. So that gives to me a much stronger impression that, you know, as much as we all love the media narrative, partly because so many of us don't like Rodgers, the idea that the Jets stink because he's been like the marionette moving everything along, that's a fun story for people like us and for the media as a whole. Because he's a villain, he's obnoxious, he's gotten a tremendous ego, and here's the number one sin in sports, Chuck, he doesn't have the talent to back it up. You know, it's one thing if you're Bo Jackson and you're calling yourself Bo Jackson and you're Bo Jackson. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But when that sheen gets off the rose, all of a sudden you're just someone who talks a lot. And that's With Rodgers, you know, there's this, you know, people, you know, that live like a hero, die a hero, live long enough to become a villain. It's like people were loving and into the narrative of the villain Aaron Rodgers, and count me among them, because I find a lot of what he stands for to be pretty darn noxious. But that being said, Chuck, that doesn't make it true just because it's the narrative that we want to hear. Right. And Woody Johnson is a bad, bad dude.
He's
not one of the good guys.
Yeah,
not one of the
like
good
the way
guys.
Muhammad Ali might say.
Right. Not a bad man. And not even one of those franchise owners that we might appreciate because they write the checks and stay out of the way. This guy wanted Aaron Rodgers benched. This guy wanted Robert Saleh gone. His reasons are extremely erratic. His politics are extremely erratic. And then the coup de grace is that he did not, in fact, get the appointment this go around from Trump to be the ambassador of the UK, even though he wanted it so badly. And
The Jets are 1-6 since then.
Well, but that's the other thing, too, is that the one thing that Trump does not like is the idea of being associated with being a loser. So that's one thing he will not want. He cannot abide. It's like, oh, you're going to get the guy who runs the Jets to be your ambassador. It's not great for the brand he's trying to project. So I find it kind of hilarious that the Jets' horribleness is actually sparing us this guy. I mean, not that he's going to start a war with Great Britain or anything as the ambassador. I mean, it's a cushy position if there ever was one. It's not like they're sending him to Syria or something. You know, this is what you send rich billionaire 80-year-olds who write checks to your campaign. But I just find it hilarious that he has to suffer this one last humiliation. You deserve it, Woody Johnson. Okay.
That's right.
Let's go to break. Let's go to break right now, because I actually do want to talk the Shahir story a little bit more with you. Because the Palestine cleats, no one's talking about this, but it is a part of this story. Let's go to break right now. And also, we're trying to get Rebecca O'Keefe on the line from Irish Sport for Palestine. These things can sometimes be difficult over international waters, but we are making it happen. We'll be back right after this on The Collision here on WPFW. We are the place where we are trying to change the world one broadcast at a time.
No joke, I used to let the mic smoke. Now I slam it when I'm done and make sure it's broke. When I'm gone, no one gets on, cause I won't let nobody press up and mess up the scene I set. I like to stand in a crowd and watch the people wonder, damn. But think about it, then you understand. I'm just an addict, addicted to music. Maybe it's a habit, I gotta use it. Even if it's jazz or the quiet storm, I hook a beat up, convert it into hip-hop form. Write a rhyme and graffiti in every show you see me in. Deep concentration, cause I'm no comedian. Jokers are wild, if you wanna be tame. I treat you like a child and you're gonna be named another enemy, not even a friend of me. Cause you'll get fried in the end when you pretend to be competing. Cause I just put your mind on pause and I complete when you compare my rhyme with yours. I wake you up and as I stare in your face, you seem stunned. Remember me, the one you got your idea from. But soon you start to suffer, the tune will get rougher. When you start to stutter, that's when you had enough of fighting it'll make you choke. You can't provoke, you can't cope. You should have broke because I ain't no joke. Broke. Who can keep the average dancer hyper as a heart attack? Nobody's smiling, cause you're expressing the rhyme that I'm styling. This is what we all sit down to write. You can't make it, so you take it home, break it and bite. Use pieces and bits of all my hip-hop hits. Get the style down, packed in, it's time to switch. Put my tape on pause and add some more to yours. Then you figure you're ready for the neighborhood chores. So E-M-C-E-E, don't even try to be. When you come up to speak, don't even lie to me. You like to exaggerate, dream and imaginate. Then change the rhyme around, that could aggravate me. So when you see me come up, freeze. Or you'll be one of those seven MCs. They think that I'm a new jack, but only if they knew that. They who think wrong, or they who can't do that style that I'm doing, they might ruin patterns of paragraphs based on you. And you all be DJ if anything he play sound familiar. I'll wait till he say play him. So I'ma have the diss who broke. You can get a smack for this. I ain't no joke.
Boom, we are back here on The Collision. This is where sports and politics collide. I'm Dave Zirin, joined by Chuck Modiano here at your home for Jazz and Justice, 89.3 FM, WPFW. So thrilled, as promised, Chuck. You see, Chuck, I make a promise to the listeners. I am going to write that check every time. As long as it's not a... I got to. As long as it's not a physical check. As long as it's just, you know, political, psychological, emotional. But not, you know, actual funds. But, yo, thrilled to have on the line, as promised, Irish Sport for Palestine, Rebecca O'Keefe. Rebecca, how are you doing?
Hi, I'm great. How are you?
Overexcited and over-caffeinated. But
sounds like it.
But give us a sense, if you could, Rebecca. I mean, we're obviously, you know, as excited and over-caffeinated as Chuck and I are, you know, We have real questions about the state of the movement in terms of sports, standing in solidarity with the people of Palestine, in terms of in the United States, where students are at, where activists are at. You know, the election has everybody turning in circles a little bit. How would you describe the vibe in Ireland right now among the people who are doing the work to try to build solidarity?
Yeah, interesting you've mentioned that, because similarly, we could have a similar landscape in Ireland, because we have also just had our general election to elect a new government. And I guess the state of play right now is it's looking like much of the same status quo. It's looking like the parties who were in power are going to get back in. There's going to be talks and coalitions now coming up, but it's looking like much more the same status quo. So I think people are so disappointed, fed up, and there was a real shot and a real feeling that there could be change, there could be, you know, a real change where the opposition and the left-leaning parties could come in, but that's not looking like it's going to happen. And of course, we have a really active civil society, really strong pro-Palestine movement here. And one of the main, you know, things we would have asked for coming into this election was if the government will pass what's called the Occupied Territories Bill. And this is a bill that like was tabled 6 years ago, and the government did nothing to advance it. It's basically a bill that will say that trade is banned in the illegal settlements, which is, you know, complying with international law. And I think before the elections, there was real pressure on them to pass this, and they were again more the same, yeah, we'll do it, or we have to do X, Y, and Z to it. And they're trying to garner votes, and it's now looking like they'll just do much the same because they've gotten in, and in their heads they haven't had any accountability, and it's much of the same.
Brutal, absolutely brutal. You know, I Chuck, jump in if you want to ask anything here. I don't want to come in and cut you off or anything, but
yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I'm just hoping, like Rebecca, you could also maybe before Chuck jumps in, also just paint a, you know, we are a local radio program here in the D.C., Maryland, Virginia area. Why is it that in some respect that we're even talking in the first place? I mean, what is it about Ireland and its history that puts it in a position where it sees Palestine and Palestinians as a natural ally?
Yeah, it goes back to our own history. So Ireland has been colonized. It's colonized by the British. We had our own experience with oppression, occupation, forced starvation, displacement. We also still have a part of the country that is a part of England. Some would still say it's still occupied. The British also, so they would have practiced a lot of the brutality in Ireland first before they exported it to Palestine. Balfour had a hand in a lot of brutality in Ireland before he went on to do the Balfour Declaration. So Irish people really, really feel a strong solidarity with Palestine because the situations are pretty similar, obviously different scales and different contexts, but we definitely feel an affinity to Palestinians. We have been extremely strong in supporting them, in supporting their right to freedom, and we have probably been one of the more vocal nations on this, given our own history.
Amazing. It really is. And where does sports play into this in Ireland? Can you speak about some of the history? Like, this is not a new thing in terms of sports showcasing solidarity with the people of Palestine and there being a sporting connection between the two parts of the world.
Yeah, so, well, just recently we have Irish Sports Palestine in the last year that has been formed. Basically, a lot of sports players and athletes said, we can't stay silent. We have to use our platform to put pressure on not only politicians, but other organizations and sports people to act and to show solidarity, but to sanction Israel. So that's come about, and that's been really strong. So we've been doing lots of different events through sport. We had, well, Bohemian Soccer Club had the Palestinian women's soccer team over for a friendly, which was incredible. We are doing many different sports events. We're hosting different events and trying to platform and restore that sense of normalcy to sport and to Palestinians that they're denied. But I suppose historically, in Irish sport, we have national sports called Gaelic football, hurling, and camogie. And so that was part of an association that originated through nationalism and anti-colonialism and around independence. It was used kind of to promote and preserve Irish culture, language, indigenous pastimes. So those roots of anti-colonialism, you know, grassroots, community, voluntary, it's still an amateur sport. We still hold on to that, and in certain parts of the country, especially in the north, it's still used to be politically significant. And so we've always kind of, well, some people have kind of always aligned sports and politics as, you know, hand in hand. And so recently now, the GAA has set up, well, a club has set up the GAA teams in the West Bank. So this is another connection that Ireland and Palestine has, and kind of the spirit of the GAA, the spirit of independence, the spirit of nationalism, spirit of sport and play and resistance, kind of how we can kind of build on that and connect.
Mm. Yeah, and we haven't seen, Rebecca, the same level of sporting involvement over here in the United States. But like what we do see, if I go on social media, I see these huge rallies that are going on in Ireland, but particularly in Dublin. Over and over and over, we see that. We know there's a big rally coming this Saturday. But we also see other things. We've heard that the Israel was recognized as Israeli genocide was recently recognized. We see your president wearing a kufiya, and that's not going to happen with Joe Biden over here. And that's just not going to happen. But we see these things that are happening. Could you let us know what's real, what's fake, what's in between, and what is the gap between the people in the streets and the government who seem like they're on the side of the Palestinians?
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head there in saying what's the gap, because there is a gap. And civil society, the streets, the people, we're with Palestine week in, week out. We see thousands on the streets. We see various different demonstrations, rallies, actions. I mean, people are so active and mobilized here, the civil society, that is. Whereas the government is leaving a lot asking for. They're not representing us. We don't feel like, yes, they have recognized Palestinian statehood. Yes, they have officially made the ambassador rather than head of mission. Yes, they've done numerous different things in words alone. So we're saying it's all hollow words, symbolic gestures, performative action, and it hasn't really translated into real meaningful action. They haven't passed those bills that I was talking about. They haven't enacted any sanctions. So we're seeing a real gap. And the only reason why they have moved on some of those things is because of that huge civil society pressure. And we have them to thank, and everyone who has been out in the streets, we have all of those people to thank. So there's still a lot that we feel needs to be done, and continued pressure still needs to happen. And yeah, as I said, it was really interesting timing of some of those actions, about those symbolic gestures, I should say. Really, like, the timing of that was just before the elections. So it's like we can see right through it. And yes, you mentioned our president. I mean, I love our president. Very outspoken, always has been on the side of Palestinians and oppressed people, and was a socialist back in the day. And I think he is a really, really great role model for us. And unfortunately, he doesn't have the same powers that our Taoiseach, who is leader of the politicians. He doesn't have the same powers, unfortunately, in enacting what we're asking for.
Mm, a brutal situation. What about, but we need to go to break in a moment, Rebecca. Can you stay on the other side of the break? Do you have to run? I don't want to keep you if you have
here.
Pressing matters. Excellent.
No, we're just getting into it.
We are. But before we go to break, I want to leave you and the listeners with this question, and just we'll think about this as we go into the break. What is the current mood in Ireland, and what can we learn from it right now? And how do we organize in this particular moment? Big questions. Does Rebecca O'Keefe have the answers? We don't know, but we're going to find out right after this, here on The Collision, 89.3 FM, where sports and politics collide.
Peace! This is your social justice calendar for the week of Monday, December 23rd. This week, we have anticipated a lighter schedule of events due to the holiday season. On Friday, December 27th, in Upper Marlboro, Maryland, there will be a food distribution event held by the Centro de Apoyo Familiar from 6 to 7:30 p.m. at the Ministerio Edificando la Familia. More information can be found on Eventbrite. On Saturday, the 28th, the Ujima Collective Work and Responsibility Honoring Our Village event will take place from 12 to 2 p.m. at the Smithsonian's Anacostia Community Museum. More info can be found on the Smithsonian's Anacostia Community Museum's Eventbrite page. Finally, on Sunday, December 29th, from 6 to 8 p.m., there will be a Kwanzaa night and a youth panel discussion held at Busboys and Poets, 625 Monroe Street, Northeast Washington, D.C. More info can be found on www.busboysandpoets.com. The WPFW Social Justice Calendar connects you with the heartbeat of grassroots activism in the DMV. Whether it's a rally, workshop, forum, or community gathering, submissions can be emailed to socialjustice@wpfw.org. Please include the name, date, and address of the event. Submissions are due by Thursday at 5 p.m., at least 1 week in advance of your event. Space is limited, so submissions are considered in the order received. The Social Justice Calendar is one more way WPFW connects, engages, and uplifts our community as we build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Absolutely as pressing as ever for the people of Gaza and the West Bank, but that the response does not feel as ferocious and significant as the moment demands. But I also can be very blinkered by being in the U.S. in this post-election moment. So I'm counting on you. Our listeners are counting on you for a global perspective on what is happening in the struggle for a free Palestine. What do you have to tell us, Rebecca?
Gosh, I hope I don't disappoint after that. But no, you're right. These questions have to be asked and they have to be looked at critically and realistically. And the feeling in Ireland right now, I would say, is obviously one of absolute just heartbreak and despair and a hopelessness just for the people of Palestine. Like, we want to do everything we can and nothing's happening as quick as we want to or at all, in fact. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, yeah, a bit of disillusionment now because of the elections. But what I will say, that always just adds fuel to people. It means that we need to double down on people power because that's what's been getting us to move the needle. So we are definitely seeing people ask the questions about how are we mobilizing the left? How are we, you know, going to build that left bloc that will be a solid opposition to the status quo, to those center parties that have just been in for 100 years? So those conversations are happening. Even the strategies are now being discussed of, okay, well, does it make sense for those from government to stay out and build that left bloc? So those questions are happening, which is a positive. But definitely the people power mobilizing, that has to happen. And I do think, I mean, the voter turnout was quite low, which was disappointing, but people are engaged. We have never been so engaged, I think, because we have been activating for Palestine as well. And yeah, it was interesting because I was in America with both of ye earlier later in the summer. And it was very interesting kind of seeing the left in America versus the left at home here in Ireland. And yes, the contexts are different and it's a very particular context in America for yourselves. But seeing the left having to grapple with now, you know, factions in the movement and how the left has to organize and do real work to kind of overcome what is about to come with Trump coming in for another 4 years, and the widespread problems are just getting worse. So it's, how is the left going to build? And yeah, there's a lot of different contexts with, like, you know, if we protest, we're not necessarily up against the police brutality that you are. But how do you get it? How do you get your voice heard? And how do we mobilize as one? Because the thing, I just don't believe that things are just getting worse every single day. Like the news we see, the people we're talking to, it's just every single day is worse. And it's, we need to, you know, take a hard look at the left as well. Like, how can we mobilize to do better and to get people to listen? And we also need to keep hope because Palestinians don't get that luxury of, you know, this is their daily lived realities, and we have to work extra hard. And not just Palestine, I'm talking about all oppressed people, like Sudan, Syria, Yemen, you know, all the end of the day, it's just ordinary people that are losing out and facing horrendous, horrific conditions that we can't even believe or process or comprehend.
I want to follow up on something you said. You talked about the difference between the American left and maybe the Irish left. What, from your perspective, can the American left do better, or where are we falling behind?
It's difficult because it's so big, and it feels so disjointed right now, especially because you really only have two choices of parties, and that isn't giving enough options. I did think in your elections, you know, that the uncommitted vote kind of showed what could be possible in the future in terms of third parties, and that's something to look at. It's also getting on the same page. Yes, conversations have to be had on whether you're voting Democrat or not voting because of the genocide, and where are the red lines being drawn. And it feels as well that people there are definitely people doing a lot of great work locally, but we need more people doing work, the hard work. I also think learning from other movements, because I mean, so many movements in the global south have been under authoritarian regimes and have managed to overturn them. So I do think it is learning, listening, dialogue with each other, and again, like building that left bloc to be on the same page, because right now what I would, as an outsider, would see, it's very disjointed. And people like movements against oppression are linked, but what you're seeing now is a lot of movements not supporting each other or quite possibly turning on each other, and that's not what we want.
No, certainly not. It's difficult to imagine how we win in that context with us turning against each other. What do you see in terms of the sports community in Ireland right now? If you can give us an update on where they are with regards to Palestine, any new developments we may not know about, any plans afoot that you're curious about, any things that you can hint at but perhaps cannot tell us for whatever reason that may be. Because I think when you tell some stories like this, Rebecca, I think it inspires and gets the brains working of us folks here who are trying to figure out how to make these links.
Yeah, the sports community, I would say, more and more are speaking out because they see that there is this community of sports people that will support them in that. Because I know in the States, a lot of athletes don't feel like they can speak out and they don't feel supported, or they feel like they might put their position in jeopardy. Whereas here, the more people that are speaking out, the better. And people are speaking out. They're even, you know, wearing different t-shirts or flags or scarves, and supporters are coming out with flags. We are also getting a lot of sports people to put pressure on governing bodies, which has been very positive. They've now come out and, like, you know, had some statements. Of course, we want more, we want action, but that's definitely a positive. We're hosting various events, different like fundraisers through sport, different solidarity matches through sport. We're also hosting next week, we're having Laghí Celtic and the Green Brigades coming over. So Laghí Celtic is a soccer club in a refugee centre in Palestine, and they're connected with the Green Brigades, who are a supporters club in Glasgow Celtic. So they're doing awareness evenings and telling people about their work and how they got connected and how they're using sport as a force for good. So that's happening. There's also another avenue through various academics and organizations who are actually looking back at FIFA, UEFA, and FIBA. So that's soccer and basketball governing bodies, looking at their statutes. Now, this isn't new. This has been on a few years. It's basically in those statutes, there is something called like territorial integrity. And if you breach that, it's a breach of statute. And that means the illegal settlements that have clubs that Israel are operating in are breaking that statute. So there is another avenue of pressure, hopefully. So there's, you know, trying to get a report in, trying to get mobilized through those multilateral channels to sanction Israel for you know, operating illegal clubs in illegal settlements. So that's something that we could look out for in coming soon, hopefully. So yeah, I think it's more just looking at every available channel that we can put pressure on individuals, organizations, and really mobilize. Yeah, we're being met with a lot of silence, and yes, we're being met with a lot of hypocrisy and double standards. And I think the soccer in Amsterdam really highlighted that. But I also think that might have been a bit of a turning point, and it was just so blatantly obvious, the misinformation and the response of Western leaders and, you know, the governing bodies, of how they were completely so quick to come on the side of Israel. And it was debunked very quickly. It was debunked because it just simply was untrue. And I do think that was a turning point. And it got a lot more people actually questioning why Israel is competing in these sporting tournaments, which a lot of people might not have had an opinion on before, or might have said the classic sports and politics don't mix. So I think that was a turning point. So yeah, all these things do give a bit of hope and do give a bit of fuel to the movement. So yeah, we can only give our energy to that. And yeah, there's still silence. Yeah, I mean, there's still so much hypocrisy. There's still so many, you know, selective instances of when these bodies act. But I think we just need to keep pressing.
I want to keep it here for a second, and this is a really question for both of you, because you mentioned the racist Israeli fans going on a violent rampage in Amsterdam. You mentioned the hypocrisy that we saw from leaders all around the world when they had the story wrong. 344 Palestinian athletes have been killed. We're talking about sports and politics. Can we mount an actual resistance to FIFA to make FIFA change in any way? That's a big hill. What are the prospects of that happening?
Well, again, it is using every available tool. So FIFA have been continuously kicking the can down the road. The Palestinian Football Association brought forward a motion for them to investigate breaches of Israel. They kicked it down the road again. So now another channel is this UN passage of the breaking international law with the illegal settlements. That's another way. But it is down to, I mean, the fans have been mobilizing. I mean, you don't see the French fans boycott at the next game. Oh, we need more of that. And we need more players coming out as well. So I think it is just pressure, pressure, pressure. They have to crack eventually. we have to see something crack. So yeah, you're right. Like, FIFA is just absolutely, like, it seems like there's like a giant iron fortress around them. But we have seen cracks before. I mean, with the Spanish national, the women's national team, they took a case against their national president with the sexual harassment, and they mobilized a huge community to work against FIFA and the soccer governing bodies. And we're seeing, you know, FIFA moving the dial like tiny, tiny little bits, but thanks to huge pressure. But it basically means it's not impossible, I think.
It's not impossible. Words of inspiration that I shall carry with me going forward. But I got to tell you that that's real. That's real talk. I mean, I think that that's the perspective we have to have, because I think far too many people, they're in the mindset of saying that very little is possible right now. And some of that is not knowing the history. And I think we have a real role in trying to explain to people that these movements have ebbs and flows and that change is possible. And in very recent history, we've seen that we can make progress and raise awareness and hopefully inch our entire world towards justice on the question of Israel and Palestine. I'm not saying it's not going to take tremendous work, but I think we all agree on this call that sports is a very dynamic and important lever by which to raise awareness and work towards justice. Are we all agreed on that?
I agree.
We're in agreement. Things are not possible until they're possible.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. And so many of those phrases, I think, are very important. You know, like,
live on your feet or die on your knees and things of that nature. And then you have people like Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski who choose to just, you know, live on their knees. But that's a whole separate question.
That's a whole
Rebecca
separate show.
O'Keefe, thank you so much for joining us here on the radio program.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you so much. Enjoyed yourself. You now have a huge fan base here in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. You're going to have to visit, do a speaking tour here in our nation's capital.
Yeah. And
ready,
Rebecca, as I said earlier. Go ahead, Rebecca.
Well, I'm ready when you are, but then you also have to come back to Ireland and return the favor.
Chuck, this could actually be something we talk about. We should do like an international sports Palestine solidarity panel where we beg Rebecca to come and maybe a couple of other folks from other disparate points on the globe to talk about sports, politics, and internationalism. What do you think?
I love it. And if Rebecca could come nearly 4,000 miles to come to a protest in Chicago that we mentioned earlier, then the least we can do is go to Dublin and go to protest there as well.
Well, always ready to make that sacrifice, Chuck.
I'm ready to make that sound like you were making. Let's do it.
It's like the least I can do is go to Ireland. Oh, Chuck.
We gotta make it happen, DZ.
Chuck, you're a regular John the Baptist, sir. Okay. Well, Rebecca, thank you so much for joining us. Clearly, there is more work to be done, and clearly, we will all do it in concert with one another. Appreciate you being with us here on the Collision.
Everything so Dave just said.
Thanks a million. Talk to you soon.
Cheers, as they say.
Slán.
So, Chuck.
Yes, sir.
As we wrap up the show this week, I do want to wrap it back around to what we started speaking about because Rebecca provides that bridge to do so, and that's Azeez Al-Shaahir.
Yes.
And we wanted to speak about his 3-game suspension. He wore the pro-Palestinian beautifully. People should go to his Instagram page and look at these cleats, beautifully rendered cleats with real important messages that we're just not getting in the media about the sheer toll of destruction and death being visited. He's trying to raise awareness on it. 3-game suspension. Does anything about that sit right with you, Chuck? I don't know.
No, yes.
I know. It's complicated, which is exactly why I wanted to talk to you about it.
But in the end, it might be good for us because we're talking about it more because of the 3-game suspension. And to get Israel and Palestine into the NFL conversation, it's not an easy thing to do. So yes, at the end, but let's look at this for a second. I do believe it definitely influenced. I saw the hit live. Okay. And when I saw it, I thought, okay, it was a hit, but I didn't think it was, you know, different than thousands of other hits that I had seen before. So the first thing, he gets a penalty, 1 game at most, based on documented history. At the same time, it was Trevor Lawrence. And it's one of those situations where Trevor Lawrence got injured after. And once you see he's injured, you probably get that suspension of at least the game based on Trevor Lawrence being injured. Maybe you could argue 2. No way 3. 3 games, I think you got to fold in to who he is and what he stands for. And in that way, it is similar to the Robert Saleh situation. At the same time, the fact that we are talking about it is good. Do I think he should pay and lose his salary? No, I'm for, you know, raising a little bit of money for him, for somebody doing it to pay those suspensions, because we are talking about Israel and Palestine in NFL circles, and that is nearly impossible.
Very important point. That, you know, and that always happens. Sometimes there's overreach on behalf of the powers that be that then allows us to be able to do different kinds of organizing. And frankly, that's my prediction for the Trump era, that new eras of organizing are upon us, not the conventional wisdom that we're going backwards. It's more that we now have to readjust and refigure out how we want to move forward. But moving forward is still, to me, very much in my plans for 2025. I'll tell you that right now. Chuck, just the one thing, though, about Shaahir that I also wanted to say, I know we got to wrap up, but they were trying to make him sound like a quote unquote thug, you know, because that's the language they use.
Yeah.
When they see violence in black athletes.
Yeah.
There was an amazing press conference by the young Caucasian general manager of the Houston Texans, who, using a lot of cussing, defended Azeez Al-Shaahir this week and said he was in our locker room for 6 minutes before we made him the defensive captain. And I will not have his character, and I will not have his character besmirched. And it's kind of, you know, and that to me is sort of like the power of sports, too. Like, yeah, you have people from profoundly different backgrounds, probably profoundly different politics, and yet there's a kind of bond there that provides solidarity and support for someone like Azeez Al-Shaahir. And that's where I'll end on this subject.
I love it. I love it.
Great to talk to you, my man. Thank you, Rebecca.
As always.
Thank you, Magic Mike.
As well. Yes.
Yes. For everybody out there, we are out of here. Stay frosty. We're the Collision. Peace.
Join some of your favorite WPFW jazz programmers as we bring in the new year with our annual day-long retrospective, celebrating the best in jazz from 2024. We'll spin a potent combo pack of our favorite jazz recordings from 2024. We'll pay homage to our jazz ancestors who transitioned in 2024, and we'll remember some of our favorite jazz performances of the year. The day starts with Herb Taylor, 5 to 8 a.m., followed by Candy Shannon, 9 to 11, Craig Williams, 11 to 2 p.m., Willa Jenkins, 2 to 5, Helen Vixens, 5 to 7, Paul Bailey, 7 to 9, and Miles Willis rounds out the day from 9 to midnight. Join us for our annual WPFW New Year's Day Jazz Special from your station for jazz and justice.
On New Year's Day, beginning at 10 a.m., the WPFW family and the members of King Solomon Grand Lodge will distribute to those in need all of the winter gear so generously donated by our listeners. Items such as coats, hats, socks, and more for men, women, and children are available. Support for our community begins at 10 a.m. from the Lodge, 2245 Rhode Island Avenue, Northeast. Additional information at wpfwfm.org or by calling the King Solomon Grand Lodge at 202-378-3843. A very heartfelt thank you goes out to all who contributed. We wish you a very happy holiday season and a prosperous new year. WPFW and our partners continue to positively impact the community one event at a time.
Greetings. This is Brother Jamil, host of Yardbird Suites. During this season of lights, we ask that you remember WPFW and the sustenance we provide to the community. You can give the gift of WPFW from December 15th through December 31st during our year-end membership campaign. It is indeed your generosity that has allowed WPFW to provide news, music, and information to the people since 1977. Donations can be made anytime at wpfw.org or by calling 800-222-9739. We wish you truth and peace now and in the new year.
Greetings. If you're already a cherished member of the WPFW Jazz and Justice Circle and your contributions this year have not reached $1,000, your membership will expire on New Year's Eve. To renew your membership or become a new member of the Jazz and Justice Circle through the end of 25, donations can be made during our year-end fund drive from December 15th through the 21st. Anytime before December 31st, Jazz and Justice Circle donations can be made several ways. By calling 202-588-9739 during the pledge drive. By visiting wpfwfm.org and clicking on the big red Donate Now button. Via Cash App at $WPFWFM or
via text by simply texting WPFWFM to 80181 and following the clear and easy prompts.
Peace, this is Atan Thomas, and you're listening to WPFW Washington, your station for jazz and justice.
Bush and Bin Laden, you think they're foes? They're in business together. Danny Bush knows the Carlyle Group.